I'm Max Sheehan. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm certainly pleased to be here this morning. This is something else. I was at the first Gopher State. I spoke at the first meeting of the first Gopher State. And my sponsor was the chairman. I've had quite a trip in Alcoholics Anonymous with my sponsor. We drank together the last few years of my drinking. And then he went away and got sober. And I had to call him. I felt that it would be only right that I would give him the benefit of my joining Alcoholics Anonymous. I felt obligated to go to him, kind of upgrade him in the fellowship. They met, Jenny mentioned the little pamphlet just for today. Well, in those days, he used an interview called 20 Questions, and they were all loaded questions. Like, did you lose time from work? And I always thought they had that wrong. You lost time from drinking if you went to work. And then they had one that said, did you seek lower companions? Well, geez, I drank with the guy, you know. How low could you get? So I had to come in. I phoned Cease on Friday and or Thursday and said, I'm going to talk on sponsorship, but I'm going to change it to sponsor neglect, because I hadn't heard from him for about 10 days. If we had the money we've spent on phone calls in the years we've been together, you could almost retire on that. And people say that they have trouble getting in touch with their sponsor. And we've talked. I don't think we've missed a week. And you know the great thing about having a sponsor like I've got is you don't have to be anything. You don't have to be right all the time. And he doesn't have to be right. And we can phone up and talk to each other about the things we did wrong and not be judged. And we both had problems in this fellowship, and we've been able to share. And I know that I've never had to take a drink since I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've always felt that if the people that have trouble knew the people that I know, they wouldn't have that trouble. I've always felt kind of guilty that I've had the help I've had from the people that have helped me. And other people haven't had that. And many years ago, I kind of decided to work with slippers. And that's been a great experience. It's amazing the number of people that do come to Alcoholics Anonymous and find they have to drink again. And it's never seemed to amaze me that people in Alcoholics Anonymous get so pious in their sobriety. You know, somebody drinks and they say, I wonder what happened to him or to her. And we forget pretty quick that alcoholics sometimes drink booze. And we wonder what happened to them. And then we go around raising hell with medicine because they don't understand that this is an illness. I'm of the old school, I guess. I think the greatest thing in the world for your recovery is to sit and watch somebody sweat it out. I think it's a shame that you take somebody and put them in a hospital or a treatment facility too soon, you know. Sit and watch them for a while. If you're lucky, they won't die on you, but, you know, It's a great experience. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, they sat with me around the clock. And one would go, and then somebody, there'd be a knock on the door, and somebody'd come in, and the guy that was there would leave. And they sat with me. And I remember one guy was real bright, Millie mentioned him, Elmer. Elmer was CESA's sponsor, and he was a real bright guy. I was sitting trying to eat some poached eggs. This is about 2 days after I made the call, and Elmer looked at me and said, "Are you not feeling too good?" And I thought, what a genius he is. Somebody said that service is the rent you pay for the space you take up on earth. And if you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and miss this service part and the sponsorship and giving, God, I don't know what you stand for. I just don't understand what you be here for, because you're missing the whole deal. Sponsoring people and working with people is just such a great thing. And my whole life is involved with the people that I sponsor. And it just happened that way. And working is just something you have to do to live in this goofy society. You shouldn't get hung up on that too much. And it's nothing for me to have two or three people in my office and everybody thinks I'm having a big conference and they don't disturb me and they take my calls and it's just a couple of drunks and we're having coffee. And and my business, it just, you know, strange thing happened a couple of years or 3 years ago. We had to find a new firm in Toronto to represent us, and I went into that. I had to go down and get the whole deal started again, and I went in and the sales manager met me at the door and said, "Have you met our president?" And I said, "No, I haven't." He said, "Well, why don't we go and meet him now?" And I said, "Okay." And he took me into the president's office, introduced me, and the president of that company said, "Mac, I hope you're not tied up tonight." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, I thought maybe we could have dinner and go to a meeting." And he had heard me at the Toronto conference that Millie mentioned. And I found out that both the president and the vice president of that company are members of the fellowship. And we have quite a relationship. And my company, that I can't tell us to, they think I'm pretty smart to go down there in a very short while and have such a good relationship with those. And that's the way my life is. I really haven't got much to do with it. It just happens that way. And you should enjoy those sort of things and just let things happen. I was going to Prince Albert, to the Prince Albert Roundup, and Tommy B. asked me to go out and pick up the tickets. And at the time, he wasn't doing anything, and I was busy, and I was kind of annoyed. As a matter of fact, I was damn annoyed. I was sulking. And I got out to the airport, and I was stomping through the airport to pick up some tickets, and I all of a sudden heard somebody say, "Are you Mac Cheater?" And I looked up, and here was this nice-looking lady, and I said, "Yes, I am." And she said, "Well, I've just been down in my office crying and praying." So I said, "Well, why don't we go and have a cup of coffee and you can tell me what the trouble is." And as we're walking up the stairs, I said, "How did you know me?" And she said, "I heard you speak at a meeting." She said, I was going to Al-Anon for a while. And I said, "Oh, what did you think of that meeting?" She said, "I went home and threw up." So later on, I got even because I was able to make a rapid diagnosis of her condition. I called her an ordinary garden variety drunk. And she'd never forgotten that. But That girl was almost totally helpless, and so she used to call me every day. She would call me, you know, almost if she wanted to go to the bathroom, she'd phone me. See, it was all right, and God, this guy was quite a nuisance, so I'd just get to my office in the morning, and the phone would ring, and it'd be Janice, and she'd be crying and having problems, and so I had read someplace that you know, the first thing you should do in the morning is eat some citrus fruit, that would increase your blood sugar level and you'd feel better right away. And so I used to say to her, well, I'll tell you what you do. Eat half a grapefruit and then go for a nice walk and come back and have a hot bath and then call me. And that was good. You know, that'd take at least an hour. And that was in July. The weather was nice, and she had a park near her home, so she could go and walk in this park, and it was right on the river. It was good therapy for her. And about 6 months later, in the middle of winter, and it gets a little cold in our country, it's about 50 below, we sort of co-sponsored another gal. And one day, this other gal phoned me up, Mary, and said to me, how long do I have to keep this walking up? It's 50 below and I'm down there freezing, and all Janice says to me is eat some grapefruit, go for a walk, have a hot bath, and calm it. So those two gals have taught me a great deal. You have to be careful when you sponsor somebody what you tell them to do. Some time ago, a young fellow came to me from another town and asked me if I knew anybody there that could be a sponsor. And I thought of a few people and told them to check with them and call me. And he called me and said that he hadn't been able to arrange anything. And so I said to him, well, I'll tell you what, instead of looking for a sponsor, why don't you go and sponsor somebody? You see, for all that a sponsor does for you, the greatest thing that happens is the people that you sponsor. And they don't know, maybe, that they're giving to you, but you can't give this thing to people without them giving you more back. You can never get ahead of that deal. The more you try to help somebody, the more you owe them. I had my sponsor introduce me here, and when he did, he said he wanted to introduce the best friend he had in the world. And he had me crying before the meeting started. But that's what developed from him sponsoring me. And because I love that guy, and he knows it, and he loves me, and we just have that kind of a relationship. And I have found that in trying to sponsor other people, they give me so much. As a matter of fact, there was a gal from Winnipeg whose husband was a delegate, and she was in New York and with her husband and was invited to go to visit Bill and Lois at their home. And while she was there, she said to Bill, how long should you sponsor somebody? Like, how many years do you be somebody's sponsor? And Bill said to her, as long as you need them. And I've never forgotten that you sponsor somebody as long as you need them. And I have been truly blessed in this fellowship with the people that I've sponsored. I sponsored a gal who got sober successfully, and her father was an alcoholic. And one night she came to me and said, you know, my father said to me, if you would just spend the time with him that you've spent with me, he'd be able to get sober. And I said, well, tell him to call me. And she said, well, he doesn't like to call you. He thinks you're too busy. So I called old Ross up. And I've told this story here many times. But I called old Ross up. And Ross had been around Alcoholics Anonymous for some time. He was, you know, a slipper. And I sat in meetings many times with Ross. And nobody ever asked Ross what he had to say. And sometimes, if they did ask him, if he said anything, they wouldn't pay any attention anyway. It was sort of an afterthought. Well, Ross, what do you got to say tonight? You know, because Ross was drunk, and he shouldn't have been there. And a lot of people figured that he should have been sober, and if he was drinking, he shouldn't be there. And I never quite been able to understand that. But old Ross, we got together, and we had a little meeting, and sure, he was drinking. And the next night, I got a phone call from another guy that I'd been sponsoring for some time. His name was Cliff, and Cliff was quite an exciting guy to sponsor, because Cliff used to keep a loaded shotgun with him, and when he got in real bad shape, bad enough to phone for help, he would be on the point of suicide. And it was always exciting to go into Cliff's house and meet that shotgun and have him say, I'm going to blow my head off. And I could never figure out how he was going to do that when the gun was pointed at me. And there's just something about doing that at 3 o'clock in the morning that's thrilling, you know. So this night, Cliff phoned me, and he said, I'm sorry to bother you, but he said, I phoned everybody else I know, and nobody will come and see me, and I really need help. So I thought this would be a good time to take Ross on a call. So I phoned Ross, and I met him, and we went over to Cliff's house. And I found out later that Ross was drinking Cliff's booze while we were there. I didn't know it at the time, but here I am. I'm the old timer, and I'm cold sober, and these guys are both drinking, and they're conning me right out of my bootstraps, and I thought it was great. They decided that we should have breakfast together the next morning, and I met them for breakfast early in the morning. I bought the breakfast, during that meeting, they said if I would just spend some time with them and take them through the steps, and that they wouldn't have to drink. And if they went to the group, well, there was too many people around, and they never got any attention. So I said to them, well, why don't you have a meeting at a time when nobody else would show up? And we've been meeting at that time every Sunday morning since. We have a group called the Golden Slippers. And Ross and Cliff kept right on drinking. Ross was our secretary and treasurer. I remember his wife phoned me up and said, my God, what would you let him handle the money for? I said, well, if he's drinking, he probably needs it worse than any of the rest of us. And I found that out years ago when a fellow that, an old timer, told me that I got upset because somebody drank up our kitty money. And I was really lacing into this guy. I think it was $18 he had spent. And this old fella said to me, well, didn't you ever steal any money? He said, you know, this isn't the ladies' aid we belong to. He said, he'll pay it back. And sure enough, he did. And so I never worried too much about Ross taking any money, because I figured, what the hell? If he needs it, he'll take it. If he does, he'll probably pay it back. And if he doesn't, what difference does it make? And Ross got sober. And turned out to be the worst damn secretary we ever had, sober. We had to rotate him right away. He quit keeping the books, and he quit doing all the things he was doing when he was secretary when he was drinking. And one day I was going to a meeting, and I thought, if I don't do something for Cliff, he's going to die. Cliff, every week, his liver was sticking out farther, and he'd lost his home. I'd watched this happen right in front of my eyes. His home and his family and his job all disappeared. And I thought, if we can't do something for this fellow, he's surely going to die. And that day I was sitting at the meeting and I watched him and had no idea what to do. And after the meeting I said to him, I've been invited to go down to Blue Ridge in North Carolina. Why don't you come with me? And he said, would you take me? And I said, as sure as hell would. He said, well, I'll sure go. And I said, do you think you can get time off from your job? He said, hell, I'll quit my job if I have to. I don't know what happened in Blue Ridge, but Cliff never had a drink since. And next month, I have to go to Peterborough, and it's Cliff's birthday, so he's coming to Peterborough with me to celebrate his birthday. I don't know how many years he's been sober, I forget. But in the meantime, I don't know how many other people got sober in that group. And tomorrow night, one of the gals from the General Service Office, Vinnie, is going to be in Winnipeg, and she gets there before I'll get home. And so Janice and Mary and about four or five of the girls that they've sponsored are going to meet Vinnie and look after her. They're all sponsoring people now. And I'm a grand sponsor. When I was sick, I missed a couple of meetings. And each Sunday after the meeting, all these gals would come over to the house. And we had meetings there. And they wanted to look at all the old stuff I've collected over the years and correspondence I've got and old grapevines. And I got kind of a little miniature archive. And we sort of spent several hours going over stuff like that. And these are all people that the gals sponsored that I sponsored. And it just goes on and on. And it's just like we're all part of a great big family. There's never a day goes by that people don't phone me. And talk to me. And I don't know what I'd do if this didn't happen. The phone rings, and I got people in my office, and I'm in the middle of a meeting, and the phone rings, and somebody tells me that they've launched on a new project. They're trying to find they're reading a different deal, and they're trying to improve their conscious contact with God. And I got this going on the phone, and I got three or four hard-headed businessmen sitting there, and they don't know what the conversation's about. And at night, the phone rings. I have a regular routine. I can't go to bed until people have phoned. And sometimes if I really want to go to bed, I have to phone them and say, hey, I got to go to bed. I can't wait for your call. If you don't enjoy this kind of thing, well, you're missing the boat. And you don't have to be wise, or you don't have to know anything, because all we ever have to share with anybody is our own experience. You can't sit down and read in a book how to sponsor anybody any more than you can read in a book how to love your wife. If you don't feel it, it's not there. You know, if you don't love people and want to do something for them, you know, you haven't got it. And life is very simple, you know. There's no big complex deals, you know. Like somebody said to me this morning, did you sleep well last night? Well, how could you sleep badly? I mean, you're either asleep or you're awake, you know. You got to be one or the other. So, if I say yes, I slept well, it doesn't mean I slept all night. It was when I slept well. When I was awake, I was awake well. It's simple. You know, there's nothing complex about any of this business. One time I hadn't been in Alcoholics Anonymous too long, and I was working in a jail group, and some of the people I drank with were in that jail group. And sometimes people get into jail groups in order to get out, you know. They really don't intend to stop drinking. That might come as a shock to you people, but some people in there are people in Alcoholics Anonymous who have a little con in them sometimes. And at least in Canada, maybe it doesn't happen here. And I had a fellow that I went to see, and he spoke to me because I had cigarettes, and all he had was those make-your-own kind. And they wouldn't give him the kind of cigarettes he was used to smoking in jail. And they give him a package of tobacco and some papers. And so I remember him saying to me, you know, I don't think I'm an alcoholic. I never drank rubbing alcohol or anything like that. And I said, well, why the hell should you? You stole $5,000. You might as well, if you're stealing money, you might as well drink good scotch. You know, it doesn't cost you much more. And when he got out, he didn't come to see me like he promised. And in the town I was living in, then they have what corners called scramble corners. I don't know if you're familiar with those or not, but that's when all the traffic stops and all the lights turn, the walk sign comes on, and you can go in any direction you want. And just everybody scrambles across the intersection, and then the lights change and the traffic starts to go. And they're great because you can go anywhere you want to go. And poor old Ken, he was on a scramble corner when I caught him. And he couldn't go any direction I couldn't go. And he stopped right in the middle of the intersection with kind of a sick look on his face. And I said to him, let's go and have a cup of coffee. And he said, okay. And we went up to a club called the Alano Club. And he didn't know what it was. He didn't know anything about it being an AA club room. And that afternoon, I took him to a meeting. And now, you're not supposed to sponsor people like that. You're not supposed to con them into AA. But Ken never took another drink. And he was sober until he died. And he was getting up in years then. And I remember the first time I took him home and took him into my house, and we had lunch. And he cried. And I couldn't understand what was wrong with him. I said, what are you crying for? He said, well, you know, I was in jail, and I didn't think anybody would ever invite me into their house again and let me talk to their kids. And he cried. And Ken was just like a member of our family. And Ken's wife never treated him too well. And he used to come and tell me about some of the mean things that happened, and I used to say to him, you can't deny right. You just do what's right, and sooner or later you gotta win. You can't deny right. And one day he came over, and I said, okay, that's it. Let's get rid of her. I'll phone a lawyer, and you've just taken all you need to take. And he said, no, what you've been telling me all these years is right. He said, I just shouldn't have blown up. And he never did leave his wife, and she never treated him much better either. And Ken took a heart attack one night and died. And you see, all of these people are part of me. I can't, there's never a day goes by that I don't think of people that have given to me so much. I remember an old timer named Ed, and we used to meet in Ed's basement. Ed told me one thing I've never forgotten. He would never let me go in a back door. Luggage, and we used to go to places, and I remember we pulled into the Saskatchewan Hotel one time. I went to go in the motor entrance with the luggage, and he said, hey, isn't that the back door? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, we'll go around the front. Well, it was easy for him. I carried all that goddamn luggage all the way on to the front. But Ed said, if you're going to go, go first class or don't go. Alcoholics Anonymous is a first class fellowship. There isn't any better in the world. And when you do something, don't look for the cheapest place in town to do it. You know, don't look for the crummiest hall in town to have something in. Go top drawer so the people will know. And I remember being at a meeting one time where they were discussing a New Year's Eve party, and the committee in charge to save money had come up with a kind of a crummy deal, and on the way out, old Ed said to me, well, you better decide what we're going to do on New Year's Eve, because we're sure as hell not going to that party. That New Year's Eve, we sat in his home, and he had had a heart attack, and he went out and bought champagne for the ladies, and he and I sat and with his family and my wife and I, and that was the last Christmas he was alive. Ed was a railroad man. He was a baggage man. Ed came to Alcoholics Anonymous because they found him in a hotel room drinking himself to death. And he never did stop shaking. He was sober many, many years, and he still shook. He read the big book by kneeling on his bed and holding it against the wall. He couldn't keep it still. And we used to meet in his house, and when I left that town, every meeting there was a chair that Ed used to sit in, and that chair was always empty after he died. Nobody ever sat in his chair. See, I can't tell you what's happened to me. The book says that it's indescribably wonderful, and that's why we can't describe it. How can you describe the feelings you have when somebody shakes your hand, and all they do is shake your hand and say hello, and that's all that you need? I can't describe to you the number of times that the phone has rung just at the right moment. I can't describe to you how you can walk together and yet be miles apart. I don't have the words. Many years ago, I heard a minister talking about a fellow who had written a poem, and he described it as the very essence of lack of humility. And the poem was written by a man who was dying a terrible, suffering death. And the words were, "It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishment the scroll. I am the master of my fate, the captain of my soul." And those of us at Alcoholics Anonymous know that that man was really a humble man. Because, as Bill said at Long Beach, we all have the power of choice. And we choose in Alcoholics Anonymous. You people are here this morning because you choose to be here. We always have that power of choice. We always are the captains of our souls. And when the Master walked on earth, you know, he must have understood alcoholics, because he didn't bother with those shall nots. You know, the worst thing in the world you can say to an alcoholic is, "Thou shalt not." And right away he will. So he took another approach, and he said, "A new commandment I give you, love one another." And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. That's what sponsorship is all about, is loving each other. If you want to help somebody get sober, just love them sober. And that's why I'm here today, and that's the only thing I've got to share. The only thing I can ever give anybody is not a whole lot of smarts, not a whole lot of advice, not a whole lot of information. All I can do for anybody in this world is love them and carry on with what was given to me. And when I try to do that, it just comes back to me in measure I can't describe. I walk with many people, and I never now cease to wonder at how this all happened to me. Virginia described some of the things that happened to her and I, and it doesn't matter where you go in the world. Alcoholics Anonymous is all over the world. I just wish sometimes that people could come and listen to what happens here and try to apply that. We live in a world full of conflict, and you and I walk in a world full of love, and it just seems that so many people are getting shortchanged. I just can't help but feel so sorry for them, and we're just so fortunate. Because of you people, I'm a truly blessed individual. Thank you very much.